This week an event occurred which passed a threshold we set for ourselves at Ask an Atheist with the sexual assault allegations and subsequent firing of David Silverman, former president of American Atheists. The reason the threshold was met is that David Silverman is someone we have directly worked with and promoted on Ask an Atheist. This is someone we were directly involved with. I've received emails asking about why we haven't spoken more about other prominent atheists with similar allegations. The reasons are complex, but I will say that there is unaired content we have produced, opportunities that we have passed on, and interviews that we have declined to take because we had concerns about the character of the people we would be working with. Some of those people are prominent atheists who are now facing similar allegations of sexual misconduct. If you took my previous silence as a preface to a declaration that this current series of allegations are a witch hunt, or that our flawed legal system should have sole jurisdiction, you will be disappointed. I'm silent because I don't know what to do here. I don't know that Ask an Atheist, a low-comedy current events show, is a respectful venue for this discussion. I don't see a method that has a reasonable chance of avoiding harm to everyone involved. Myself. Victims. My family. Others. I'm afraid I will make things worse. I've said from the start that atheists aren't special. We're human beings, and we come with all of the flaws that come with it, including these. Now that we've crossed our threshold, I must speak out. I find the allegations credible. Now, I think it's an open secret that I don't usually consider BuzzFeed a valid source, but when American Atheist itself links to the article involved to substantiate their claims for firing Silverman, I find it hard to ignore. I save my strongest ire, my loudest condemnations, my worst rants when I make them, for the priests, the politicians, the business moguls, people who seek positions of power over others for their own gain, causing harm, seeding hate, and filling minds with harmful superstition that kills. David Silverman may not be any of these, but he's the closest thing we've got in the atheist community. I find I must use a similar standard, and I have publicly and repeatedly condemned the powerful for similar allegations. I would like to be wrong. I'm telling you this in a pre-show announcement because I don't know a panel discussion where we all say, well, crap, is going to serve us here. Because a lot of people are surprised, including me. This is not something I expected, and frankly, if one of my hosts has a divergent opinion, I would like to have a very pointed discussion with them, privately, before I give them airtime again. And finally, I want to make it clear that it's coming from me, Sam, the executive producer of the show, for whatever that means. And this is the editorial opinion I intend to take. I don't have much more to say. I'd like to be open to your feedback as to how I should address this in the future, but I don't think I am the one to address this. I don't think I should even attempt to make myself the face of this kind of thing. And I'm afraid that any statement I make, any big deal I make about this by trawling out rumors and allegations and what I know about the community, because what I know about the community, frankly, is what you know about the community. If you read blogs or it, I'm in no favored position. I don't think I'm the person for this. I don't think Ask an Atheist is the venue for this. But if I'm wrong, please explain. I don't know how well I'll accept it. So anyway, that's that. Now onto the show. So I'm thinking about making soap. I don't know if I've mentioned this.
Is this a Fight Club scenario?
No. Oddly enough, it's not a Fight Club scenario.
So you're not going to scar everybody that's in your cult to with a kiss?
For the last time, I don't have a cult. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842, toll-free nationwide. And, you know, I used to use this soap back in the day, and I really wanted it, I kind of missed it. And so I had Becky get it again for me. Are you familiar with Dr. Bronner's soap?
I am. It's what I use.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I love it because it's good soap and it's got really creepy labeling.
The creepy labeling is my one complaint.
I love their creepy labeling, I got to admit.
It's pretty out there.
But it's also apparently got some disagreeable components in it, and there just isn't anything that comes close, so it's like, oh, maybe I got to make it.
Which ones?
Palm oil.
Oh, yeah. Palm oil is an issue.
Yeah. And so if I want soap with a mint oil strong enough to burn, I think I'm going to have to make it myself. I think that's basically what I'm left with at this point. So, I don't know why I'm telling you this, but it's a thing. How are you, Luke?
I'm doing great. You?
Ah, fantastic. Josh, how are you?
I'm doing okay.
All right. Are you not familiar with the soap? Because it looks like
I am not familiar with the soap.
Are you looking at dilute? Okay. Are you looking it up? Is that what you're doing over there?
Yeah, I was trying to see if it was something for like that would be useful for eczema, but it sounds like it's not.
I don't know that we're doing that news story, but but speaking of news, I know it's not necessarily an atheism related thing, but it's a thing that's been on my mind for a while, and I am obsessed with this story. Anyway, I'll just get into it. Billy Mitchell, hot sauce entrepreneur, early video game competitor, erstwhile world record holder for several video games, and pseudo-villainous star of the 2007 documentary King of Kong, was stripped of all his titles and banned this week by record keeper Twin Galaxies in response to evidence of cheating at Donkey Kong. Guinness, of the Book of World Records, and not the beer, also stripped Mitchell of his records and his recognition for the first perfect game of Pac-Man. After a several-month investigation involving several Donkey Kong cabinets, a $6,000 VCR, and microprocessor code disassembly, it was determined that his several record-breaking scores of Donkey Kong could not have been produced via an official circuit board. Whether or not the scores were made using the arcade emulator MAME was not officially determined, as the use of alternative hardware alone was enough to disqualify Mitchell's scores. Mitchell was also set to give a response to this ruling this weekend, but as of airtime, no response has surfaced.
You know, the reason we have the Guinness book is because of the Guinness beer.
Is it? So, I figured that can't be. They're both kind of in that area. So I figured there had to be.
I looked it up. In 1951, one of the managers of the Guinness Brewing Company realized that there was no compendium of the best of things.
Mm-hmm.
So he got together with some journalists, and in 1955, they published the first book.
Okay.
As sort of a commercial enterprise that goes along with their beer.
Okay, so you'd get a pint, and they would tell you that the guy who has performed the most surgeries back to back was some guy who also has a pending malpractice suit or something. Right. Like that.
So this is like the initial. This is the first instance of trivia night.
Yeah, it was like a promotional that had like this really cool water resistant cover, and eventually they separated in 2001. It was bought by another company.
I can tell you for sure by the 80s, the Book of World Records was not water resistant. Because that's how I lost my first copy.
Oh, yeah.
Was submersion in water.
This was just the original version.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so that is related to the beer. I always thought like maybe they were once related to the beer and then no longer. Sort of like Wrigley Field.
Yeah, it's like that.
Yeah, yeah. I love this story. I mean, okay, one, you've got the 2007, the King of Kong movie, which is pretty amazing if you like watching wacky people.
I'll have to watch it.
But also the way they managed to determine this, it's really interesting, and I'll see if I can do a creditable job of how they determined that they were cheating, is that the way the Donkey Kong circuit board is built, it's a 1981 circuit board. So, you know, a lot of discrete logic chips in there. It's not as integrated and tight and as you see in modern circuit boards. And it has really only one frame buffer that is being written to and read from at the same time. So it's really, so the Z80, the Donkey Kong boards run on a Z80 microprocessor. I have a stick of them in my room. So when the circuitry that goes to write to output to the arcade monitor while it's reading it, the Z80 is reading data into it, and you get this really interesting sort of fade in.
At the same time it's fading out.
As the same time it's being read to, so it looks a little bit like blinds are being shut across it, but it also comes in like little slices. It's being put it together like a puzzle. And so when you look at like the barrel stage, you'll see five girders. Now the Z80 emulator in MAME also draws it the same way. The emulator code is fairly accurate. However, it's double buffered. So what happens is some code will be read in, MAME will take a flash of that frame buffer and then read it out. So while it's being drawn the same by the Z80 processor, it's being written differently to the display by the emulator code. So you'll end up seeing things like, you'll see five girders instead of three, or three girders instead of five. I don't remember the exact number. And the other difference is that in the arcade, invariably, Donkey Kong and the oil can appear simultaneously, invariantly in the arcade, where... in the emulator, that ain't necessarily so, because sometimes the display buffer will check it while both things are being written.
Right.
It's really interesting stuff. Especially about the Z80 processor, which I've always found a little fairly interesting. And then they had this guy, you know, they had Twin Galaxies, you know, had this thing on their forum where they had people going on about it, and then Billy Mitchell got this other technician guy who seemed to know his stuff, saying, you know, coming up with, well, it could have been because of the, you know, a difference between a camera the camera shutters if it was pointed at the screen, but this was direct feed, so there was no video sensor involved. It was electronically generated, and just the electrical pulses were being sent. There was no optical phase. But they, you know, and so he had his guy who was going through a bunch of hardware. Everybody brought their Donkey Kong cabinets out. Everybody got, like, and Billy Mitchell's guy had the equipment that Billy Mitchell apparently used to record the scores. You had people all over the place modifying their Donkey Kong boards to figure out how to get basically the original arcade software to look like MAME. And nobody could do it. And eventually Billy Mitchell's own guy came to the conclusion that this was done. This couldn't have been done. He didn't say it was done with MAME. He said it could not have been done with an original arcade board.
So he knew that this was against the rules when he did it.
He was part of the team that came up with the rule set.
Yeah, he specifically said he didn't want people using emulators. Emulators are a cheater.
There is a track for doing emulators. Like, if you want to make the game and there's a specific version of MAME you can run, and then. For the record, I'm not a competitor by any means. I only play games for entertainment purposes, and I'm certainly not starting a video game podcast. I certainly don't want a Mega Man style sprite made of me, which is apparently how the visual signal that you are a video game podcaster. I don't know. Have you looked at that? Everybody's got one. I don't want one.
No.
But just the technical stuff behind all of this, I found really fascinating. And then on top of that, you've got wacky people, which is also a thing that I like reading about. You know, where it's kind of funny, because after King of Kong came out, everybody went, you know, everybody in Twin Galaxies, and I kind of, you know, watched that. It's like, oh, it was a lie, et cetera, et cetera. It was completely... You know, it was edited for dramatic purposes. Nobody's really that bad. And now that I've read, and I read the entire 3,000 post thread going over about 6 months, this is how obsessed I've been about it.
How long did that take?
Like actual hours?
Yeah, like, or how much time did you spend reading through 3,000 posts?
Probably 18, 20, something like that. Because sometimes I would stop and verify claims. Like, I probably spent 5 hours going through about 4 seconds of video frame by frame at this point, if I were to collate it all together. it's fun. I mean, I found it really like validating, like, person being personally able to validate these claims by taking recordings of MAME, taking recordings of the Billy Mitchell tapes that they posted, and going through them frame by frame to see how it turns out. I found it really fascinating. It's the kind of, yeah. Well, as I was saying before, though, I don't believe them, because it turns out a lot of these people are kind of worse than they're made out to be in the documentary. If you want my absolute take on it.
There's a level of obsession that goes with playing an old game that much.
Yeah.
And that,
well, yeah. If you're really good at it, I'd stick with it. Like, I still play Mike Tyson's Punch-Out every chance I get, because I'm actually pretty good at Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. I'm nowhere near the world record holder. In fact, I've never actually beaten Mike Tyson. But it's a game I can get to Mike Tyson, but I can't get past Mike Tyson. On the other hand, I might stop playing if I actually beat. Like, the games that I still play are the games that I've never beaten. I've never beaten Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. I've never beaten Mylon's Secret Castle. I've never beaten any of the Neo Geo Puzzle Bobble games. I don't think you can beat Food Fight.
Ooh. I beat Golden Axe once.
Oh.
That's the only one I've got.
Yeah. I'm the reverse of that. I play Contra. I can beat that without dying once. And so
you don't have to use the Konami code for that?
I still do, just for the fun of it, just okay. Because it's kind of the thing you do.
Yeah.
But, Contra, so I always bust that out.
Do you think you could still do that? Because I would like to see. I have never seen somebody not die in Contra.
Yeah, I'd have to play through it a couple of times at this point. It's been since 2007, I think, because I was killing it in Iraq. When I was in Iraq, I was playing it on an emulator and just continuously on my little DS. It's great.
But again, it's an emulator, so you can't.
Yeah, I know. I don't have an original
NES. I'm not suggesting that he do it for some sort of world record. It's just something. I've never seen anybody that good at Contra play.
Yeah, no, I nailed that down. I used to get yelled at all the time because I'd die and then I'd reset, reset. I would never even wait to go for a second life. And then eventually I got to the point where I beat all the levels.
Well, that's how it's done with these Donkey Kong guys. Is one of the things that I determined as well is Donkey Kong. Hey guys, there's a kill screen coming up. You've never seen the movie, so the joke doesn't mean anything to you. Donkey Kong has a fixed length. There comes a point where a bug in the code is triggered, and you literally can't play anymore. I think it's like the 255th level or something like that. And at that point, so you have a fixed amount of time, unlike a lot of other early arcade games where you can score. Uh-huh. And so you have, in order, like the current world records right now are over 1.2 million points, which is a lot. And so they'll get to the point where, like, if they're at, like, the 32nd stage or something like that, and they've only got a couple hundred thousand points, they'll just die and start over. Or if they're, right. You know, if it's their cabinet, they'll just reset it. It's like, if you're really working to hit that point, and you know you're not on track, what's the point of continuing to play? Yeah, I get that.
Funny that this story came up, like, 2 weeks after Ready Player One was released.
Well, okay, I was talking to Mike Gillis about this, and there is literally nothing Billy Mitchell does that isn't an 80s villain trope. I mean, the only thing left, is he's got to threaten threaten an orphanage is the level we're at yet. But I mean, he dresses like an 80s character. Mike actually said, he's a bit Cobra Kai. And I was going to go there. Yeah.
Does he kick illegally?
And I kind of wondered... is he in Ready Player One? I know he's in Pixels, but the less we talk about that, the better, I find. But is he actually in? Because it seems like the kind of guy who would be in Ready Player One.
Well, he wasn't in Pixel. He was, it was Peter Dinklage as Billy Mitchell.
But the writer said Peter Dinklage's character was based on Billy Mitchell. Which,
that's funny.
Yeah.
And he was a total Shazbot in that. So I think Adam Sandler actually called it.
Yeah. Fair enough. Well, it wasn't Adam Sandler writing it.
Right.
I think that might be why some people saw it. And now I want to try his hot sauce. I'll be honest with you. I expect it to be kind of bland and possibly emulated. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to the back, and we're going to the break. What the heck was that? We're going to go somewhere, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the coming superstorm.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Billy, I am the Queen of England. You must give me your lunch money.
Why?
Because it'll explode.
I don't know.
I'm the Queen of England. I know things.
Well, that makes sense. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because an authority says it doesn't make it true. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I'm melting!
Let me see, make sure I get it right this time. Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Look, I didn't have to use a save state or anything. All right. Longtime radio show host, broadcast engineer, anti-war activist, radio station founder, and nutball, Art Bell has died at the age of 72. Bell famously produced Coast to Coast AM, which discussed all manner of conspiracy theories and paranormal topics, until retiring in 2003 and handing over the reins to George Norrie. Bell tried his hand at satellite radio and an internet-based project in the early parts of this decade as well. Coast to Coast AM's stated their hope that Bell, as he begins his journey to the other side, finds out all of the answers to the mysteries he pursued for so many nights with all of us.
That brings back memories of my dad watching that or listening to that show late at night when I was hanging out over there, just the intro coming on and then them talking about really, really weird stuff for like an hour.
Like what kind of really weird stuff, if I may?
Well, I mean, aliens, government conspiracies, I don't know how much they got into the health stuff at that point.
Right.
Really.
Yeah.
Now, Art Bell, was he into it or was he more of an interviewer?
I think he was a curious interviewer, but he was apt to believe some of it. I mean, if you listen to him when he talks about it, like one segment of video of his I've heard a lot is the John Titor stuff, because I was like, come on, guys, this is really obvious. You know, skeptic. That's kind of, you know, I hate listen. It's a thing. Just let it ride. But it seemed like he was just willing to go along with it sometimes. But I do believe that he believed a fair bit of what he was talking about on his show on Coast to Coast. I mean, personally, as somebody who lived in the Midwest, if you were driving long distance and you hit the fairly unpopulated sections of this great land, the AM dial basically became the Art Bell substrate, where you could hear stations for hundreds of miles around you in every direction, and they were all playing Coast to Coast AM within about 5 minutes of each other. And so there were times when me, and actually this even happened most recently on tour, but that was with George Norrie, where you're driving around and, did he really say that? Hang on while I find a station that's 5 minutes behind so I can hear it again and see if he actually said that.
Was it really that, how did it become so prolific?
I always had curiosities about that, and I never really tracked it down. I suspect it's a very popular program that he also produced fairly inexpensively.
Oh, okay.
You can also thank the ionosphere for being able to hear the show from other places.
Right. I mean, AM goes a lot farther, so, because you've got skywave propagation. A bit about that later. But
he'd be on multiple stations at the same time, means that a lot of people would pay for to be able to, what's the term when you... Not franchise, but
syndicate.
There you've been a host on a syndicated radio show. Remember the word syndicated. You're going to be using it, possibly in a resume. There's Art Bell is one of those guys that if you're into supernatural stuff because you believe in it, or because or like us, you've spent a fair bit of time sort of recreationally debunking it, you've heard of Art Bell.
So is he like a proto David Icke or Alex Jones?
I'd say I'd say Alex Jones would have found a less fertile ground if it weren't for Art Bell. But where Art Bell was jovial and kind of
never angry.
I never got angry. And I mean, he did talk about the apocalypse, but he was always, you know. Yeah, he was more of a neutral radio host. I use the word jovial. He was pretty happy about whatever he was doing.
Okay.
Because he was one of those guys who actually really liked radio. He, like, created a market for the kind of stuff that Alex Jones moved into. But Alex Jones is
out there. He's extreme. His levels of emotion and anger are way more than Art Bell's ever were.
Yeah, I think if Art Bell and Rush Limbaugh were abducted by aliens and had their genetic material removed rectally and put into some sort of alien clone baby.
Okay.
And that alien clone baby was deposited somewhere in the vicinity of Austin, Texas, right around the time Bill Hicks died, and somehow got bit parts in movies, you would have Alex Jones.
Alex Jones in space.
Yeah. I am saying right now that Alex Jones is Rush Limbaugh's and Art Bell's alien baby. And I specifically use Alien Baby because it removes any culpability from Art Bell or Alex Jones.
Or Rush Limbaugh.
Not completely.
The only Art Bell story that really sticks to my mind was there's a recording. I'm not sure if this one was on the end of one of the Tool albums or not, but I do remember hearing it elsewhere. This guy was on a phone, in a phone booth somewhere, talking on the show, and he was talking about how these intergalactic aliens were taking over the government. And he was communicating long distance via satellite link, and towards the end of the conversation, the satellite actually lost track of Earth, and the conversation was cut off.
Okay, the other thing that I have to mention is Art Bell. I cannot remember his prefix, but the last three call letters were OBB. It may have been W6. That would make sense. But Art Bell was really into ham radio as well. Art Bell and I have a lot in common, like a ridiculous amount of stuff in common. We both love radio. We both love radio in its professional and amateur aspects. Where the point where he had the president of the ARRL, which is the National Radio, the American Radio Relay League. It's the National Ham Radio Organization. He had the president on his show when he was still hosting it, and for like a long interview, not to talk about aliens in space, not to talk about time travelers from a Robert Heinlein future, but just to talk about the hobby of ham radio and how neat it was.
That's cool.
Yeah. And so, I mean, we've got that in common. He holds, going back to Guinness Book of World Records, he has the world record for the longest time on the air at 116 hours, where he was slinging music solo for 116 hours.
How do you do that and stay alive?
Amphetamines and having a pot to pee in.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, he was playing music, so he had time for a bathroom break. But apparently he was solo, queuing the records, doing the, like, it was, we've done streamathons, and I'm only allowed 24 hours. I suggested 48 hours once, and I was told precisely where to put that idea.
I think this should be a challenge. I like this.
You know why he did that, though, right?
Why is that?
It was a giant fundraiser for, I believe, Vietnamese children.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he did that all for charity.
Okay, that's cool. So it's hard to say that he's, a bad guy, and I've got so much in common with. I'll even go one further. He's the author of the book The Coming Superstorm, which was turned into Becky's favorite disaster movie, The Day After Tomorrow.
Oh.
Oh, okay. So he's one responsible for that pile of.
You got to admit, it's kind of fun.
It was an enjoyable movie.
It's a stupid. Let's not
it's
pretend.
It's a bad movie.
I enjoyed it.
Nature destruction porn movies are
so
it wasn't as bad as 2012.
No, 2012 was way worse.
That was so bad.
It was so dumb.
2012 was great.
Hang on here. What?
No,
back that up.
Woody Harrelson's character is probably like the one that made that movie for me.
So it's got 2 good minutes in it because he's only in it. He's only in it for about 2
right,
minutes.
But it was great 2 minutes. So that's why I think it's justifiable.
Actually, no. Woody Harrelson's character in that movie wasn't that good. I'm sorry. It was fairly standard nutball until his flash video. His flash video was gold. Do you remember that? Where he's like,
I don't remember the flash video.
Okay. Like at some point, who was the main character in that?
John Cusack.
Oh, yeah, John Cusack.
John Cusack goes on the web to find this guy's stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a video of Woody Harrelson's face as the world is destroyed.
How many times do you guys watch 2012?
I've seen it
once.
Twice.
Okay, I've only seen it once.
Yeah.
And, I couldn't sit through that movie another time.
I wanted to make sure I hated it for the right reasons, so I watched it twice.
I was very sure.
Yeah. Well, that and Becky wanted to see it, I have to admit.
Okay.
Day After Tomorrow, Becky really... She didn't care for 2012, and she likes Day After Tomorrow still. Now, her preferred way of watching it is with the Riff Tracks, of course. But she's actually watched it in other languages, and she shows it... Like, if she's got to play a movie or something like that, or if she, you know, at school, she's got the Spanish version of
right.
Day After Tomorrow. So, I mean, you can say that Art Bell was a purveyor of exactly the kind of crap that we decry on Ask an Atheist, and you would be absolutely right. And I'm not going to pretend that that's not the case. But when you're talking about somebody who did it specifically as entertainment, and not at the level that we're talking about with the modern day analogs of Alex Jones and the 5,000 even less people who are even less credit.
He didn't do it to take advantage of people and make money off of them.
Well, advertising.
Yeah, but I mean,
he didn't take money directly
right,
from.
He
them.
Wasn't selling his own supplements to save people from chemtrails.
I couldn't speak to that.
This is almost my Billy Graham argument.
Yeah, it's a little bit your Billy Graham argument, but I've got a little bit more where you take that away from it. Art Bell was literally into everything that I'm into. I mean,
right.
I'm just Art Bell, less famous and less credulous. and okay, also not as cool. And so it's really difficult for me to just come out and say, do the expected, well, he was a bad guy and I'm glad he's dead. I'm not. He did a lot of stuff for something that I really care about. And he did a lot of stuff for charity. And he wrote a book that got turned into a really bad movie. And he probably also turned a lot of people onto some really bad stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
so,
fertilize the ground for some crazy thinking.
Yeah. So I gotta take the good with the bad there. So, speaking of ham radio, I do have an email. This is Richard from Virginia who writes, as a skeptic and a ham radio aficionado, I hope Sam might be able to help me with this. Assume you have an old transmitter, late 1930s technology, transmitting at 50 watts at 3105 kilohertz during the day and over water. The transmitter is about 1,000 high. Could a voice signal be picked up at signal strength 5 or good at 400 miles?
1,000 high?
So to go meters or feet?
Where was the email from again?
Virginia.
Probably feet.
So probably feet. So that's 300, roughly 300 meters.
Yeah.
Well, it's during the day, so, and that's a lower frequency, and lower frequencies usually are usually better absorbed by the D layer. And lower frequencies usually do better at night as the critical,
yes.
as the critical frequencies go down. Or as the critical frequency, it's only one. I imagine if we had more suns, we'd have several critical frequencies, but, why is 3105 kilohertz? Why does that stand out to me? That's gotta be some sort of frequency. Well, I mean, it's clearly a frequency, but I mean like yes. some sort of specified frequency.
3.1 megahertz.
Yeah. 3.105.
Oh, it's really close to microwave frequency. Well, 1,000 off from microwave frequency for the actual microwave oven.
More than a... Oh, yeah, maybe 1,000. Yeah, okay.
If it's... Yeah.
Yeah.
Gigahertz. Gigahertz, excuse me.
I think given, if I knew what date it is, actually it's the 1930s, so we're not going to have good tropospheric history for the 1930s. On the right day with the right equipment, it's entirely possible, because not only do you have to consider the transmitter, but also the receiver involved and the antenna that the receiver... Oh, I think I know what this is. Because 1,000 feet high over water, that's got to be aircraft.
It's Amelia Earhart.
Is it?
Yeah, Amelia Earhart's distress signal was supposedly 3105 kilohertz. And during the nighttime,
yeah, 3105 is a distress or is a aviation, was an early aviation frequency.
Yeah, and then for the daytime it'd be 6210.
Hmm. So she was on 3105 during the day.
3105 at night.
Okay, but he says 3105
during the day. So that's, yeah, he's probably wondering why they had to switch off.
It is possible, but I would say, especially given the kind of frequency or the kind of antennas that you could put on that sort of airplane for HF, it's going to have to be fairly electrically short.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Even with a coil. It's possible, but I wouldn't depend on it. And apparently they didn't depend on it because they had a nighttime frequency as well. But if you had a fairly nice gain antenna on the ground and you had... And you had favorable tropospheric conditions, it is possible, I would say. Probably it's not something I would depend on, but it's definitely possible.
Yeah. Well, I have my ham license. It's been a while since I've actually messed with that stuff, so I don't...
I used to not do a whole lot of HF. I was always more into digital modes because I'm a computer guy.
Right.
Those are fun. And always, I've always lived in apartments, and the one house I owned had covenants that disallowed antennas. So
they can't legally do that, can they?
Oh, they can. Yeah, absolutely can.
They could do whatever they want.
The AWRL tried to pass a bill outlawing that a couple years ago, but I don't think it made it out of committee. You know, last year I took my vacation, I convalesced on the mountain, and I brought an HF radio with me, and I built an antenna up there, and I did HF for the first time. So,
oh, that must have been fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. So I brushed up on a little bit of HF theory and tried to relearn what I knew about space weather and all that stuff. So yeah, like I said, possible. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. I'd love to get more questions like that, but I don't know. I was entertained. Were you entertained?
I was.
Oh, okay. Great. When we come back from the break, we'll have a couple more emails, and we'll talk about ice cream, Kirk Cameron, anti-vaxxers, that sort of thing.
Has Ngadwe Trust invaded your town? Are you tired of government officials who want to plaster Ngadwe Trust on taxpayer-owned property? Are you afraid because your local sheriff placed an In God We Trust decal on the patrol cars? We are here to help. The original motto project is for those who feel the separation of church and state is an important issue and should be honored regardless of your belief or lack thereof. Theists, non-theists, and all free thinkers are welcome. We need your support to show politicians that diversity exists within our nation, and their promotion of a monotheistic religion and push for theocracy will not be tolerated. Stand up and be heard. Join us at originalmotto.us.
Ask an Atheist may have gone on the road, but we're not making big bucks.
We still need to keep the lights on, and 95% of our costs are for airtime alone.
That's why we need your contributions.
If you've got something to advertise, consider Ask an Atheist in your ad budget.
Our listener Peggy said it best. Step up and contribute to keep secular voices on the air. For $5, you could have a latte or a moment of science.
Take on Peggy's challenge and contribute today.
For details, go to askanatheist.tv or contribute directly via PayPal to paypal@askanatheist.tv.
You You know, I forgot to read the last sentence of the Amelia Earhart video or email, which was, yes, there is a skeptical angle to this. So that's apparently it is apparently, I, you know, there are there not like mystical theories about what happened to Amelia Earhart or something like that? Like Bigfoot transported her to the set of the $6 million man?
Aliens or something.
What? I've never heard this.
Well, I might be making it up. Yeah.
But I mean, I've heard that like she lived on like mysteriously, like there's pictures of her supposedly living off 10 years after the fact.
Those ones are pretty much disproven. Recently, they think they've confirmed they found her remains.
Yeah, okay. Her bones.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like I said, given marginally favorable HF conditions, I think you could be heard with the right antenna 400 miles away. But given 1930s tech, in the kind of climates that we're talking about, it would be marginal.
Right.
I think that's what it is. The third installment of PureFlix's God's Not Dead series debuted earlier this month on nearly 1,700 screens nationwide with only a $2.6 million opening weekend. The first film made $62 million after a $9.2 million opening weekend, and the second film grossed less than half that at $25 million after a $7.2 million opening weekend. God's Not Dead, A Light in Darkness... no more words in there, focuses on a pastor whose historic family church sits on the campus of a state university. The church pastor and Christians in general are victimized in the film to the point where a clergyman literally dies in a fire set by a romantically heartbroken arsonist. This movie sounds like a train wreck.
If you ever listen to God Awful Movies, they touched on this movie and they just said, like, essentially it's a movie that refutes itself.
I love self-refuting arguments.
That's essentially what it is.
I haven't managed to watch any of these movies yet, but I did watch the trailer for this, and it looks like the arsonist did it on accident. He threw a brick through a window and it hit a gas main, and then the whole church exploded.
Well, what does the state of his romantic life have to do?
I have no idea.
Also, romantically heartbroken.
I tried to find a way to watch at least some of this without giving anybody money, any money to anybody, but at the same time, I didn't want to break the law.
Yeah.
So I didn't.
Fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, the way I do it with stuff like this is I wait for the second, because if it's as bad as people say, eventually you're going to find it at Goodwill.
True.
That's usually when I pick it up.
It wasn't available on Netflix. I didn't check Amazon.
I just saw romantically heartbroken, and that's a fine phrase to say. I'm not making fun of the person who wrote this, but then it made me think of other types of heartbrokenness, like economically heartbroken, medically heartbroken, mathematically heartbroken.
Yep. Yeah, from what I gathered, my little bit of looking into it, it's, you know, Hallmark Channel grade.
Well, they were all kind of Hallmark Channel grade stuff,
but this one, I guess, was nicer than the other ones.
Okay.
Yeah, like, well, it didn't pick on us so much.
So did they, who was their failed television star or movie star this time?
I don't think there were any this time.
There was no famous people. It's got David A.R. White as the preacher.
Okay.
Which he's been a preacher in every Christian movie you've probably ever seen.
Okay. I've seen two.
He was probably the preacher in that. He's like, he always plays like the kind of like rock and roll kind of preacher. The more like long hair kind of.
Oh,
so more down to the earth.
So if you have, if you're a guy with long hair, you can play rock and roll Christian preachers in Christian movies.
Absolutely.
I'm not asking for any particular fiduciary.
That's
interest.
All you need. Just
all you have to do is convert.
Okay.
Or pretend to convert.
No, I'm an actor. I don't have to convert.
All you have to do is act it.
Like, hey, if you're a Christian and you're listening to this, I will totally play a preacher in your movie. I've already played Satan. I mean, what's left?
How are your feet? Because the sandals would be awesome for that.
I've got socks on, so yeah, the sandals would be great.
Perfect.
Are you talking about the venerable Billy?
Billy?
Did you play Satan on the Billy commercials? Is that
no? That's
to?
Not me. That's somebody else. No, I played Satan on a student film.
Okay,
That's somewhere on YouTube. I'm not going to tell you where it is.
I'm going to have to find that.
Yeah. Speaking of Billy, though, we need new commercials. I didn't plan to talk about this, but we've gone to non-commercial radio, so we need to run more PSAs than we do ads. And at this point, Billy has been a camper for so long on Ask an Atheist.
He should have been a counselor years ago.
He actually, assuming age 8, He is now old enough to be a counselor. So we really should, like, hey, if you got some ideas for, like, PSAs for organizations or something like that, or maybe a new script for Camp Quest or Camp Quest Northwest, hey, hit us up, atheist.radio. And, yeah, we need to renew the sound a little bit. Speaking of old stuff that we're tired of hearing, a Louisiana congressman employed a video message from teen heartthrob-turned-Christian actor Kirk Cameron in an event designed to bring attention to religious freedoms in public schools. The Freedom Student Summit was held earlier this month in Bossier Parish, Louisiana, where Cameron and Congressman Mike Johnson aimed to convey their belief that religious expression has been challenged more and more and even misunderstood to the point where people believe our public schools are supposed to be some kind of religion-free zones. The summit was held in coordination with area churches in response to a February lawsuit by Americans United for the Separation of Church and State against Bossier schools. Plaintiffs in the suit allege widespread use of prayer on school property and during school events, in classrooms at all levels, at sporting events, at graduation ceremonies, during awards assemblies, and at student government meetings, along with school staff evangelizing to students.
Huh.
Yeah.
So he's kind of taking things out of context a little bit there, isn't he?
I mean, just quite a lot. Yeah,
yeah, just a lot. So, I mean, students are still allowed to pray.
Yeah,
they're allowed to do that all they want. The only real issue here is when administration, teachers, and coaches decide to pray and lead students in prayer.
Right.
I've experienced this recently over the past couple of years with our own South Kitsap High School Coach Kennedy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Who's still fired?
Still fired.
Yeah. I know he's still fighting to get his job back.
Well,
right?
I don't think he's going to get his job back, but there was recently an appeals court case that was thrown out again. So I think he's going to try to take the Supreme Court, but his appeals, I believe, are all out now.
Okay. Because, like, what if he wins? And he, all right, you can go back. No, don't do that.
It was a conditional on whether or not the school wants him there or not.
Okay.
Kind of contract.
Got it.
They don't want him there anymore, as far as I understand. Too much publicity of the bad kind.
Right.
And was he that good of a coach?
That I don't know. I just know that he tried to lead some of the students in prayer in ways that they didn't feel comfortable with.
Yeah. And this was great because this is when the Satanists came and did their little protest.
Yeah. Football, so don't care. But, I mean, if they wanted to have a religious freedom summit in school summit, like with Christians, where it wasn't about propaganda, but was specifically educating students about you are allowed to pray in school, you are allowed to pray with other students in school, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, with the truth of the matter, which is here is what students are allowed to do, and here is what teachers, who are representatives of the government, are not allowed to do in schools.
Right.
I would work with religious organizations on that. Right. I'd work with Kirk Cameron on that if he was interested in spreading the truth and not just lies that allow him to propagate what remains of his career.
God's Not Dead movies?
Yeah, I don't think he's in any of the God's Not Dead movies.
He's not, and I don't think he ever will be, so I think his career is wind down.
Yeah, I mean, people still pay attention to him in the Christian media scene.
Yeah.
Yes.
He will always be the guy who's the quote-unquote journalist in the left in the good
Banana Man.
And I hate to say this, but the good Left Behind movies and not the crap Left Behind movies or movie, because the crap Left Behind movie stars Nick Cage, and I love Nick Cage. What the heck was he doing in that movie? They didn't even give him any scenes where he's crazy. Not really. Although I need to watch it again, maybe I've forgotten.
I kind of like the idea of those books from a totally outside fantasy type perspective.
I've read all of them. They're terrible.
Are they?
Actually, no, I've read all but the last one. I read all the way through Glorious Appearing, which is when Jesus shows up and kills everybody with his death laser eyes. I'm not even kidding.
So the whole Christian Apocrypha fantasy is something that I find intriguing.
The last book is great. It's Mac Bolan, Jesus in Jerusalem. It's pretty great. A group of anti-vaxxers created a scene during a New Jersey Assembly Health Committee meeting after lawmakers voted to make it harder for families to obtain religious exemptions from immunizations. The bill, which passed the committee 7-3, requires that parents provide a notarized document to schools explaining how vaccination violates their religious beliefs to ensure their objection was not misplaced. After at least 60 people testified against the bill and it passed, opponents, with fists high in the air, began shouting things like, "You're going to hell," and "Corporate America does not belong in science." Reflecting on the ruling, one opponent compared it to the Jews fleeing persecution in Europe, of course, because that's what you always do, and another stated she could not go against the word of God by allowing her child to be injected with vaccines because they were developed using aborted fetal tissue, which is also wrong.
Anti-vaxxers.
Yeah, well, I mean, it just shows you just how science-focused these guys are, how science-focused anti-vaxxers are. When the scientific response to legislation which prevents them from spreading disease which kills children is, you are going to hell.
Let me tell you, you haven't lived until you've had a child at 6 months old with whooping cough.
Has that happened?
It was one of the most awful experiences of my life. He was too young to be vaccinated.
And oh, yeah.
There were people around that contracted whooping cough because it's really easily spread. And if you don't get vaccinated, you're going to catch it and spread it and not even know you're sick. And then somebody coughs near my six-month-old, and he could have potentially died.
Yeah, it's the importance of herd immunity.
Yeah.
You have to have the population highly vaccinated to prevent those that can't be vaccinated
right.
from getting sick.
You can't get that particular vaccine until you're a year old because your body can't handle it, apparently, until that time. And, yeah, it was one of the scariest times of my life as a parent.
Just to make sure that we're not ending on a dead baby again, your child's okay now.
He is now a strong, almost 19-year-old boy, graduated high school. He's going to be getting his first job very shortly.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and hopefully moving out soon. It's going to be a combination of scary and awesome all at the same time. I already started measuring out his room because I'm going to put bookshelves in.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Turn it into an office.
It's going to be my computer battle station and my library.
Ooh.
Put a little love seat below the window so I can sit and read, maybe with a fold out bed for guests and things. Yeah, it's going to be amazing.
Well, I've been hearing a lot of stories that millennials are more, and the next generation are less likely to leave home early. So you might be stuck for a while.
He's scored a good job. Okay. So I think he's going to be good.
That helps.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I can't blame changing economic circumstances on a generation of people.
No, it's not their fault.
Well, I'm a millennial.
Okay. All right.
I'm the cusp.
Yeah. I'm not moving back in with my dad. That would be weird. Camilla from Quebec writes, "The symbol of Christianity is a man/God dead on a cross. To me, they choose the symbol to make you feel guilty all the time. Is there any other religion besides Christianity that exploits guilt like that?" I'm going to start, but I'll hand it to the panel. All of them?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Josh?
I mean, it's hard to think of a religion that doesn't use guilt. I mean, it's just one of the factors that you're going to hammer on.
Yeah.
Look at the idea of karma and reincarnation. If you're living a bad life experience, it's because you screwed up in a past life.
Right, and you should feel guilty.
You should feel bad about that and do better.
And your current circumstances are because that you've committed some cosmic error
right.
that you can't and are cosmically unable to remember. And so whatever circumstance, be it abject poverty, illness, death, pain, is your fault. And so
even Buddhism does that.
Even Buddhism does that.
Yes.
You know, Becky, I imagine, might say quite a number of words about
Judaism.
Yeah.
Is being proto-Christianity, guilt's built heavily into it.
Right. Well,
what
Christianity didn't carry over was the very specific covenant with God, which you are supposed to feel very guilty about.
Yeah,
if you violate
people,
to the point where an official, like, you know, where the apology is built into the religion in some cases. Like, this is something that Becky's told me about. I'm not an expert on this. Maybe ask her next time she's in. And I can't think of a single religion that doesn't have guilt in it somewhere, except maybe some of your modern recreations.
Maybe, or yeah, so
Scientology?
Scientology is thetans, is kind of like the in the realm of guilt.
Yeah,
like
you're I guess you got
it's not thetans. It's not so much guilt as it is protectionism.
Yeah,
but you got to pay your body thetan money, or we'll let all the bad news out. Yeah, I mean the guilt's in Scientology. I could speak to that.
Yeah, maybe some of the UFO cults, the UFO sex cults, would probably they hammer other points other than guilt.
Well, no, in some way, I mean, you could talk about Marshall Applewhite and the Heaven's Gate cult. Where, you know, they guilted people out of their cult because they weren't suitably godly enough to get on the comet that was heading out or whatever.
Okay.
I remember reading about that. I can't speak to it specifically, but I remember reading about it back in the early 2000s.
Wasn't that the comet that crashed into Saturn? No, Jupiter?
I think it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they followed the comet into Jupiter.
Yeah, I'll have to check, but
I'm pretty sure that was the same comet.
I don't know that they were specifically hitching a ride on the comet.
Well, no, there's supposed to be a spaceship hiding behind the comet. So, okay. So as long as they didn't,
as the spaceship wasn't following too closely, they were. No, we're not ending on dead baby. We're just editing a mass suicide. That's always good. That's just fantastic. I'm doing a great job. This is Ask an Atheist. Thank you, Luke.
Not a problem.
Thank you, Josh.
You're welcome.
You can go to our website at atheist.radio. Our email address is questions@atheist.radio. You can call us at 844-753-7842. Our Twitter is Ask an Atheist WA. I never check it. I should fix that. Yeah. I'm looking forward to being told how much I should hate Art Bell because of all the terrible things. See you guys next week. It is now my intention to play video games for several hours.